name is Sean Dove, and I'm the CEO of the Campaign for Black Male Achievement, and I'd like to welcome everyone to our monthly membership network call when we gather each month to share information and inspiration on what's happening in the field of black male achievement. These calls have been a wonderful incubation space for collaboration, for sharing of promising practices, for healing, and just really community building. For those of you that don't know, the Campaign for Black Male Achievement was established in 2008 as an initiative of the Open Society Foundations. We are a national membership network, and our mission is to ensure the growth, sustainability, and impact of leaders and organizations just like you committed to improving the life outcomes of black men and boys. In 2015, we spun off into an independent entity out of the foundation with the guiding belief and premise that America didn't need a campaign for black male achievement that sat in a philanthropic institution. What it really needed was something like a corporation for black male achievement that can lean into this issue for the generation that it is going to take. And thanks to the Open Society Foundations and a number of other funding partners, we were able to spin off. We are a growing network of over 3,000 organizations and 5,000 individual leaders. One of our many mission field mantras is that the cavalry isn't coming to save the day in our communities. We're the iconic leaders that we've been waiting for. You know, we're the curators of the change that we're seeking to see. And that's why CBMA exists. We're a catalyst for investing in what we like to call the hometown heroes and sheroes and local leaders on the ground doing this work. I want to introduce my co-facilitator and actually the lead facilitator on these monthly calls, Janet Dickerson. You want to say hello, Janet?
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Hello. Thank you for joining. Looking forward to another great call.
Great, great. So the agenda for this week's, this month's call, we are going to have some post-election reflections from the field, and I'll share how that will happen. We're going to hear from a few random voices on the line. Then we will hear some more targeted post-election reflections, responses, and analysis from one of our partners from Color of Change, Scott Roberts, who's the Senior Campaign Manager for Criminal Justice. Then we're going to hear from Jeff Johnson, who is the founder of Manhood Legacy, and he's going to share about that building community and how folks can get involved with that. Then we'll hear from members from the CBMA team, Robert Simmons and Chanel Hampton, to share about some recent work that has happened in Detroit, which is one of our core cities. It was a busy week in Detroit, and then we'll get some campaign updates and maybe even hear from a new member spotlight. Janet will let us know. And we really wanted to seize this moment just to gather the CBMA community. We were going to have this call anyway, but to provide a space for reflections and sharing in response to last week's election results. You know, personally, I shared with the CBMA network that so much of our work is rooted in kind of reconciling the American paradox of promise and peril, and all of our efforts to improve life outcomes of black men and boys. And look, I see this promise every day in the office of CBMA. I see it every day as I travel the country and my daily and weekly interactions with many of you on the call whose work and sacrifices, you know, just really bear witness to this growing movement. But yet the other side of that paradox I see every day also, that peril, the disparities, the police brutality, the lack of resources, the blatant disregard for the humanity of black people. We see that every day in our work, and that's why I say that we have to reconcile, and my leadership is reconciling that promise and that peril, and building on the promise that I see. And I know that after last Tuesday's election, the sense of peril was magnified for so many of us on this call, and that so much that we felt that we have fought for might be in jeopardy. And, you know, the message that we have at CBMA is that, you know, we've been here before. The challenges that we are facing with this new administration are not new challenges. Many of us have turned to family and friend and our collective community to support, and how do we accept and respond? I hope sincerely that no one is still in shock and disbelief. If you are, we want to pull you out of a state of shock and disbelief into a state of how are we going to react? How are we going to be more focused, intentional, and tenacious in our work? And CBMA is certainly focusing more, one, as leaders on our team, elevating our individual self-care and responding effectively to the pain, the hurt, and the trauma that we deal with daily. And some of that is just being black in America. And also, how can we be more intentional in our leadership? And how can we be more intentional about our intersectional approach? How can we be more intentional about breaking silos, more intentional about dealing with the divisions, the natural divisions that are happening and that exist in our movement building work? And how can we be more intentional about our tagline, be more intentional about loving and learning and leading in this area and era that we are facing? I know for me, look, I remember being on the a freshman on campus at Wesleyan University in the fall of 1980 when Reagan was elected and defeated Jimmy Carter, and this sense of doom and gloom, and we pressed on and we got through that. I remember right here in New York City in 1993, the fall of 1993, when Mayor Giuliani beat out Mayor Dinkins for re-election. And for those New Yorkers, you may remember that there was a referendum ballot in Staten Island for Staten Island to succeed and brought out a lot more voters in Staten Island that would have normally voted. And there was a sense of despair, and we kept on pressing on. And so that is in the spirit that I want to open up this call and open up the opportunity for some reflections in the field. I would challenge all of us to ask what would our ancestors say in this moment. This is not the first time that we have had someone leading in the White House that was racist, misogynist, and seeking to divide the country. And so this is not a new moment for us. It is a now moment. And just ask, pick an ancestor, you know, and ask that ancestor in your moment of meditation, how do I move on? What more can I do in this moment? How can I be a better organizer? How can I be a better leader? How can I be a better a person and a citizen to respond? And, yeah, we want to reflect, but we also want to respond. And so I'm calling the spirit of George Washington Carver on this call, who found 300 uses of a peanut. Someone that took bad soil in the South and turned it and transformed it into revolutionary soil and upended the whole agricultural economic landscape of the South. And that's the spirit of ingenuity and persistence and innovation that I'm calling into this call as a reflection of this moment. And so this is what we're going to do for reflections, I am going to invite individuals on this call. I'm going to call out a area code and last four digits, and you have the opportunity, and you've got 90 seconds to 2 minutes at the most before I mute you again, because we want to get a few voices. And if you don't want to say anything in reflection to the election, that's fine also. I just want to thank you and welcome you on this call. And so let's see. This is how we're going to do it. The first person that we are going to invite is area code 850, and the last four digits are 8229. 850 is the area code, and the last four digits are 8229. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Again, Troy Lewis. How are you? How everyone's doing well today?
Hi, Troy. So just want to hear your reflections. Let us know where you're from and your brief reflections and responses to the election results.
I'm really from Jacksonville, Florida. I went to FAMU for undergrad, and I have been in D.C. now for a little over 11 years. Quite frankly, you know, I think I share many sentiments with others around, you know, being shocked. I was very hopeful that things would kind of turn out differently. For me, it really was a moment where I realized that the struggle continues. I think that there are some deep-rooted things that we haven't addressed here in our country. While I believe that we've been able to make some great advances and have been doing so since we were enslaved, it's still a moment in time where we really have to change the mindset of many of our brothers and sisters here in this country. And the work that I perform right now in corrections work with adults in D.C. jails and youth in D.C. facilities is critical, because I'm chiefly concerned about stop and frisk and consequently the increase in an already high level of incarceration for our community. So I am hoping today to get some encouragement, some insight, and hope for the next few years for our community. Thank you.
And tell us where you're from again, your name and where you're from again.
Sure. Troy Lewis. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida originally, but I live in Washington, D.C.
Great. Thank you, Troy. The next area code is 248 is the area code, and the last four digits are 9669. Hello, are you there? All right, we're gonna move on. The next area code is the next area code is 773, and the last four digits are 1463. And our 1 to 2 minutes of reflection. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, I'm Brother Vince Price from Chicago Black Star Project.
Hey, Vince, how are you?
I'm doing great. What we're doing, we just had a big meeting. I'm the coordinator for Young Black Men of Honor at Black Star. We mentor young boys from 8 to 20, and we just had a discussion on Tuesday night. Where do we go from here? So we've just been trying to empower our young people that they still have greatness inside of them. No matter who's in the White House, we have to come together, support our own, care for each other, stop the senseless violence that's going on, and continue to do the work that we're called to do. And so Black Star Project, we also have student motivators that go inside the school systems and try to encourage and uplift our young people. And also, we just started the parent universities, where we had the parents come together to empower them and give them resources to be able to navigate what's going on and how to empower their young people to succeed. And so we just continue to move forward and doing the outreach that we can do here in the city of Chicago and to join with other organizations. I know I was on the line a couple of days ago and got a lot out of the and was able to share with my team and mentors that we got to keep moving forward.
Great. Thanks, Vince. And please be sure to give Brother Philip Jackson at Black Star our love, all right? And thank you for holding it down in Chicago. Next voice from the field will come from area code 412, and the last four digits are 0470. 412 area code 0470. Are you there? Okay. We're going to move on to the next one, and it's okay to say that you want to pass. The next area code is 504, and the last four digits are 1859. Hello, are you there? Welcome to the CBMA Monthly Network Call.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. This is Christine Jordan in New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm not going to say much. I'm really, really very much focused on what can we do in terms of collective action. You know, like a lot of people, I was shocked and highly upset, still upset, no longer shocked. I'm just ready to get down to work, and we're going to have to stick together. That's it.
Great, great. Christine, thank you. Are you affiliated with a particular organization in New Orleans that you want to lift up?
You know, I'm affiliated. I work in philanthropy.
Yep.
I'm not, you know, and I think there's probably a limit to what my company will do. I'll have to see. I work for Entergy Corporation, and so I'm going to push them to do what I can get them to do, but they tend to be pretty middle of the road.
Yep. So thank you for sharing that. And, you know, one of the things I didn't say earlier is that, and this is a message for everybody on this call, and you wouldn't be on this line if you were not leading and have an impact and care deeply about this nation, this country, social justice and racial justice. And whatever level that you're leading on, we need to take it to the next level. For myself included, whatever weight class you thought you were on, you need to go to the next weight class or at least start punching on the next weight class. And I just want to thank Christine for lifting up the whole principle of focus, because what we've been talking about at the Campaign for Black Male Achievement is how do we increase our focus, our intention, and our tenacity in response to the work that we were going to have to do anyway, no matter what the results were going to happen to be on when we woke up on November 9th or what happened on November 8th. We were in a fight anyway to uplift our communities. We're going to go to we have time for a couple more until Janet steps in and takes over and make sure we stay on time. The next area code, the next area code is 202, and the last four digits are 1726. Area code 202-1726. Are you there? Okay, we are going to. Hello, are you there? All right, so the next area code, we are going to go to 646 area code 3486. And if you don't want to say anything, you get to shout out your name and where you're from and say, I pass. So 646-3486 is the next voice from the field.
Hi, Sean. This is Justin Carr from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hey, Justin, how are you, brother?
Doing well, doing well. I'll keep this brief. I'm down here in Atlanta focused mainly on working on education issues, particularly college success for Atlanta students. And so in terms of a reflection on the election, I think I'd echo what folks have said in terms of focusing and really doubling down on doing good. And as you said, doing the work that we were going to need to do anyway. I would just say, in reference to, you know, reaching young people in particular, It's definitely going to be a focus of mine in terms of my mentoring to make sure that young people are aware of what's going on, understand the importance of participating in our democracy, and continue to sow those seeds so that we can really exert the power that we do have the next time we have the opportunity in the midterm elections.
Thank you, brother. And Janet, I'm going to take the liberty. We still have time for one more. Thanks, Justin. And the last voice we are going to hear from the field is from area code 662. And the last four digits, 1064. 662, area code, last four digits, 1064. Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you. This is Sean from Louisville.
Right.
I'll say hi to everyone. And I just want to share the space. I don't have anything long to really say, but just want to share the space with other folks passionate about this work. And I really can't say I was shocked more so than grossly just frustrated with what took place. And I think for me it's that precedent that suggested that the black vote no longer counted, that it no longer mattered, that we could actually run a race and not focus on the black community and still win. So that was something that just alarmed me considerably. But what it also did was renewed my energy in this work that we do and that I do back in Louisville, Kentucky, with my organization, Two Not One Fathered and Families, and just really ready to do all I can to make improvement in the lives of black boys, men, you know, the families in our community. And I appreciate
so
you having
they have. Oh, who's that? Oh, hello.
Go ahead,
that's
Sean.
Yeah, that's all for me.
Okay, great, great. And so I want to thank you all that we wanted just to make sure that we had an opportunity to hear from some random voices from the field, and the folks are not necessarily random. Each and every one of you are doing something that your unique gifts and talents that you have are allowing you to do on behalf of our people. And as I turn it over to Janet Dickerson for the next portion of this call, just, you know, want everyone to remember, you know, in this moment that, you know, we're mighty people, right? And we have overcome and moved much bigger mountains than the one that we perceive in front of us, right? Yes, we have to double down and work in a much more strategic way. We need to certainly, and I'm sure we will hear about this, what are we doing today to prepare for midterm elections in 2 years and making sure that we are more mobilized, more organized, and making sure that we win for the issues that we and the people that we care about. And so I'm just going to just encourage everyone to just keep on keeping on, and we're going to turn it over and hear some more post-elections and reflections and analysis from Scott Roberts and from Color of Change, and I'm going to turn it over to Janet to introduce him.
Thank you, Sean, and good afternoon, everybody. My name is Janet Dickerson. I'm the Senior Communications Consultant here at CBMA. And before we go into the call, I just want to express my gratitude to Sean and CBMA for creating this kind of space. I'm sure it's been an intense week for all of us. And, you know, not everyone is fortunate to have a space like this where we can come together in community in a safe environment to really talk about how we're feeling in this moment. And really think about where we do go from here. And so I'm grateful for CBMA to have created that space and for those of you who have joined in participation today. So as Sean mentioned, I mean, I think it's important that we have some sort of analysis because I think folks are still in a bit of shock those of us who did not anticipate this kind of outcome, and folks are really trying to make sense of it. There's a lot of analyses going on in the media, but one organization in particular that has great knowledge because they had been doing incredible work prior to the election and post-election in helping to provide much-needed context for the end result. That organization has been Color of Change. And so joining us today is Scott Roberts, who is the Senior Campaign Manager for Criminal Justice at Color of Change. Scott, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Well, thanks again, Scott, for joining. I'm sure there's lots to weigh in on. As you've been listening to reflections shared by Sean and other folks on the call, and just in general, just paying attention to the way people around the country have been responding in the wake of this election result, what are some insights that you can offer that could provide some context? You know, for example, many people were, myself included, were shocked over the outcome, but based on the in-depth work and research that you all have been engaged in throughout this process, I mean, was this outcome a surprise for you?
Yes. I don't know that there's anybody who can really say they – I'm sure there are people out there saying they weren't surprised. But, you know, the Trump campaign was surprised, right? Everybody, I think, was surprised by the result based on the data that was out there and was available. At the same time, I think just watching the nature of the campaign, there was probably a good split internally in our organization amongst folks who were – constantly raising alarm flags saying, can we trust this data? There were some signifiers, I think the main thing being the number of undecideds leading all the way up to election day, which I think ultimately supported the president-elect. But I think the other insight that we had was from our voter contact program that we were running. So just to step back a little bit, we ran a voter contact program we called Voting While Black, and we were reaching out to black voters in key battleground elections, and this included the presidential campaign, some key Senate races. We supported a slate of black folks running for statewide office in North Carolina, which actually was successful. We were able to elect a black man to the North Carolina Supreme Court, and in doing, tilting the majority there, at least for the moment. Looks like the legislature might try to actually add folks in response to that. But and the last thing we were focused on, and which is actually a top priority for us, was local district attorney races. So we campaigned throughout the year in district attorney races from Chicago to St. Louis, Orlando, Tampa, Houston, Cleveland, and Columbus, Ohio, with the understanding that local prosecutors hold a tremendous amount of power in our criminal justice system, and that we need to have accountability, especially in the wake of the failure of prosecutors to hold police accountable as police violence has become more and more salient issue to more folks. We did a number of things. I can get into those. To answer your question around what our inclinations were, we were running a peer-to-peer texting program, and we were contacting black voters through that in these places, and you know, we started getting some responses. That I think, like, were flags for us. I think we didn't see, a tremendous amount of people supporting, Trump, but we certainly saw a disillusionment amongst black voters with Hillary Clinton, and we saw probably more Trump supporters than we were comfortable with, and I think some of that is bearing out in some of the data where we obviously saw a higher rate of black folks voting for Trump than we saw for McCain and Kerry, which, not shocking given that President Obama's on the ballot, but I read something yesterday saying something like 13% of black men voted for Trump. So, you know, that's troubling when I go home to Thanksgiving next weekend. But I think that we have some, like, there's some fault lines in our community that we need to explore and we need to figure out how to communicate to all of our folks around what's crucial here. For us, moving forward, because I only have a couple more minutes here, and I just appreciate hearing everyone.
You're good on time.
Sorry?
No, I'm saying you're good on time. Go right ahead.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm you know, early in case there's something that I'm missing. You all can tell me. But just listening to everyone's thoughts on and reactions to the election, and I'm really encouraged because it sounds like folks are, you know, moving forward, understanding the level in which we have to continue to dig in. And for us, you know, a takeaway is that, you know, obviously we still need to do a lot of work to build the power of black folks, and that's both so that we can have more impact in winning these kinds of contests, but also to be able to protect against, you know, what I think last we figured out was the kind of permanence of racism in this country, right? How we can have these moments of you know, exhilarating moments like President Obama being in the White House for 8 years, but the country is still at a place where it can tilt right back on us and put us in a position that feels like we've gone back in time almost. And so when we look at having had a black president and the protest movements that black folks have been leading in the last few years, we know that, like, our presence has been really incredible, but we need to be able to transform and translate that into real power that both keeps folks in decision-making roles that we want there, but also to win the kind of changes that we need. And so for us, you know, I think we're looking at the need to oppose Trump, obviously, but also where we can build power. And so going forward for us, the real silver lining of the election was really incredible success that we had in the work that we were doing in local district attorney races. And so as our criminal justice director, you know, it's very important for me to continue to do that work. I think that to the extent that we can have success in the kind of localities where a lot of our folks are, we can start to build a firewall against, you know, a law and order approach from the Trump administration. In that work, we targeted local DAs. We've been pushing DAs to make different decisions around police accountability and to decrease their role in contributing to mass incarceration. Through a lot of issue campaigns, and this year we also entered into, like, the electoral fray through our political action committee, and the political action committee organized folks to send over 1.5 million text messages to black voters. We did earned media action on the ground in key prosecutorial race locations, earned media like billboards. We created voter guides focused on prosecutor races for the first time and distributed those digitally. What we're seeing in those races is that because something like 80-some percent of prosecutor races around the country are completely uncontested, meaning no one runs against them. These folks aren't used to having to deal with opponents with real resources. And our hope is to shift the narrative around criminal justice and criminal justice reform by fighting in these local races, not only in local races, but holding prosecutors accountable on the issues as well, and drive a conversation around what we're looking for in elected prosecutors to a more reform oriented perspective.
Well, and to jump in right there, I mean, I think one thing, and I want to be respectful of your time, so maybe we can kind of end it on this note, but I think from what I've been hearing, a lot of folks are finally getting to realize just how important local elections are, you know,
right.
with the conversation around Electoral College, and, you know, folks are really galvanizing and trying to contact their local representatives. So, you know, do you, in closing, do you have any sort of suggestions for how people can start mobilizing now? I mean, obviously 2020 is another opportunity, but I think folks are really looking to what can I do now? How can I engage now in a more meaningful way? So how would you tell them or encourage them to take action?
So two things. I definitely don't think, not that you're saying this, but we don't have to wait till 2020 to get engaged in more electoral efforts, right? So you know, the midterms were mentioned earlier. You know, 18 months from now, we'll be pretty much fully into the midterm campaigns, right? And we, you know, the time is shorter than we think it is. There are, like I said, we're continuing to pursue work around elected prosecutors, and there are states that have off-year elections. For instance, Philadelphia, obviously one of the largest black populations in any city in the country, and one of the biggest sources of black folks that are going into the prison system in Pennsylvania, well, the biggest source, has a district attorney race in May. So there are lots of opportunities to start engaging and shifting the conversation around some of these issues. But I think I do think that we need to focus on the local level. Right? There were plenty of campaigns that I was running, and my team were running, that were hoping to run on the Clinton administration that just are not viable, right, in the current context. And so we are definitely pivoting to local work. I want to just do some quick promotion, because if there are folks who want to collaborate with Color Change on local campaigns, we created a platform called OrganizeFor.org, and that's F-O-R, for OrganizeFor.org, where folks can build their own digital campaigns. I think that would be a key thing for us. We are, you know, also engaging with our members and volunteers on the ground. So we're talking to our folks about what questions they have. But I think that we need to, yeah, focus on local officials. Think about what are the things that cities and especially states can do to do a couple of things. One, oppose Trump, right? You know, I think it's really important that there are there are cities coming out right now. Some of the mayors I don't even like, but hey, they're coming out saying we are going to remain a sanctuary city even under the threat of losing federal funding. And we need to see more of that. And I think we need to even think about expanding what it means for a city to be a sanctuary city. So if, you know, the Trump administration is offering incentives for incorporating stop and frisk style policing, you know, how are cities going to stand up against that and take a public stand that they don't want those types of resources? When we look at the kind of coalition of law and order groups that supported Trump, private prisons, turnover police, like how do we grab more of a wedge between our public officials and some of those folks, especially when we look at private prisons, which supported Trump, you know, with millions of dollars, which he said he's going to basically pay back by further privatizing prisons against the trend that the Obama administration was going in. And so, you know, our localities and states, actually, that's the money that we give them through our tax dollars that end up funding these candidates and then, you know, create this perverse incentive in our criminal justice system. So I think, you know, thinking about how we expand that, thinking about what we want our mayors, governors to be saying, you know, hell no to. And then what are the then the second thing about opposing Trump is building, I think, the model of what we are trying to build. Because I think one of the challenges of the election was, like, when we have to fall back to a narrative of stronger together, frankly, like, no shade on the brilliant team over there, the Clinton campaign, but, you know, it wasn't visionary, you know. And we have to be able to present some examples of the world that we want to live in. I think there are cities and states around the country where we can be focused on pushing a different vision. So my focus is on criminal justice. To me, I think that's about ending hyper-criminalization, but also providing a vision of what alternatives look like. So we're trying to work with people on things like bail reform, where we not only say we don't want people to have to pay to be free before they even convicted
and people being jailed for large amounts for minor offenses, things like that. But we also want to say, what is the solution? What do we want to provide for folks in those situations? What kind of services do people need? What are the reinvestments in Black communities that are actually where we want money spent instead of further resources going into policing? So I do think the work is at the level of those are some of the directions that police are looking at.
Well, and, yeah, I think that's incredibly important. And so I think Color of Change will certainly be an organization that we need to continue to look to, for these, next steps and ideas and how we can remain engaged. And so, Scott, I want to thank you for taking the time to provide that much-needed context, and certainly encourage folks on the call to visit colorofchange.org, follow them on Twitter, follow them on Facebook, stay in touch with what they're doing, because there's certainly a lot of work that needs to be done. So thank you so much, Scott.
Thanks, Janet. And by the way, if folks want to reach out to me, feel free to, give folks my info. I do have to hop off, but I appreciate this opportunity a lot.
Thank you, Scott. So next we're going to move into the next portion of the call about manhood legacy. I want to welcome Jeff Johnson, who's an award-winning journalist and managing principal of JIJ Communications. Jeff, are you on the line?
I am.
Wonderful. And thank you so much for joining us, because I know today is your anniversary, and so you're taking time out of your celebration to talk about manhood legacy. So we really appreciate that. Manhood legacy has been helping men across the country to really build community with each other and just in general have a safe and healing space to turn to. And I think just based on the events of the last week and what we've been hearing on the call today, that is going to be especially important now more than ever. So, Jeff, before we kind of go into, I certainly want to get some of your reflections after the election, but can you talk a little bit about how manhood legacy originated? I know you do a daily prayer. Was there a particular moment that made you realize something like this was needed?
Yeah, and first, just let me start by just saying thank you for the invitation and thank you for all the work that you all continue to do in supporting folks like us. So I appreciate that greatly. In short, Yanla Van Zandt had asked me to come on her show once, and the subject was around several men who had multiple children with multiple women. We're talking, one guy had 30 kids, one guy had 15 kids, another guy had 12 kids with, 10 women, five women, four women. And so it was a multiple series show. And in talking to the brothers who were there, I recognized that there's some serious healing issues that we have. There's some serious evolution and contextual support issues that we have. And as men, there are very few spaces in public space that we have to feel like there's accountability without feel like we're getting beat up. And I used to hear all the time about how therapeutic and important the barbershop is. And I believe that the barbershop is a cultural value space. And I believe that the barbershop is an important space within our community. However, in most barbershops, nobody is off limits to talk about, but we normally talk about everybody except us. So very seldom in the barbershop do I hear honest conversation about my stuff. So I talk honestly about what's happening with the president, what's happening with Trump, what's happening in social media. But I won't necessarily hear somebody say, hey, y'all, I'm really dealing with this challenge with my baby's mom and her not letting me see my son. Anybody know what I should do? Or I'm dealing with some issues of depression. I don't know if it's clinical, but anybody ever dealt with depression in a way they couldn't deal with it. And so we don't often see spaces for that. And so Manhood Legacy Prayer came together in response to what I saw from men on that show and what I know I've been through, and to creating a space where we focus on the tenets of healing, accountability, growth, and legacy. And so for 2 years, we've been on the line every Monday through Friday with varying numbers of brothers, from, 45 brothers on the phone to 700 brothers on the phone. But we've been a consistent space, and it is a space that is non-dogmatic. So you don't have to be a Christian. Very seldom are we dealing with dogma from any specific text. And we also don't believe in praying for the sake of praying. So a lot of it is pragmatic strategy, where we're talking about how do we meet God in the middle of the work that we do, and then how do we use this prayer as a roadmap for doing that work. And so that's kind of where it came from, and some of the ideology and methodology behind it. But I've been blessed to help manage this community, because I think that the brothers that are on would tell you they get a lot out of the community, but I definitely get a lot out of having been a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, when you talk about the need for, black men and women, but especially black men, to have a space where they can, share their hopes and also their challenges, and just feel like it's a safe space to express themselves and to heal. I think that's very important. CBMA, we launched earlier this year the BMA Health and Healing Strategies for that very reason, because so many of us that are doing this work are also undergoing, trauma and have a lot of healing that needs to be contended with. But, and I know Sean, he has participated in many of these calls. So my next question to you would be, how do you think that the Manhood Legacy Initiative can really be instrumental in advancing black male achievement in terms of creating this space for brothers to, not just express their vulnerabilities and any challenges, but also uplift each other and motivate one another and encourage one another to keep going?
Well, I think we're seeing it in a number of ways. I think number one is having a space that you know is yours and it's safe. Two, hearing voices of brothers who are like yours, who are dealing with similar issues. Three, hearing brothers talk about legitimate strategies that they've used and resources that they have to be able to address some of these issues. And four, really being focused on those four tenets, right? I mean, because healing is one of them, but accountability and evolution or growth are two of them. And so healing and accountability and growth is what creates the foundation for legacy. And if we can create spaces, whether we're dealing with the results of an election and what our response to it needs to be, or whether we're dealing with how am I navigating my issues around sex in my life and what that means for me, or how am I dealing with how I communicate with the people that matter most to me. And so, we're touching all of those issues, giving, I think, brothers a space to feel safe, roadmap and blueprint and best practices and tools, a community to be a part of, and really pragmatic methodology. Because I think sometimes we in spiritual spaces get so spiritual, as they say, we're no earthly good. And so our goal is to try to fuse the two, where we understand the foundation is spirit, but it's the pragmatic engagement that I think is what really works for a lot of brothers.
Now, you've joined us, I believe, from the beginning of this call, so you've had a chance to hear reflections and thoughts that our members have been having about the election. Do you have any reflections of your own, or more importantly, any words of wisdom to offer those of us on the call today who are struggling to figure out, what the path forward should be and how to make sure that we don't lose hope or we don't lose sight of the overall goal.
Sure, and just to give a little bit of context, I mean, my firm, my communications firm, work with Priorities USA, which is the largest super PAC on the Democratic side, in attempting to develop messages and content in support of Hillary. And so we've been knee deep in this work for last year. And I was in New York at Hillary's watch party. And as, you know, result after result came in, I saw the unbelievable shift in the mood of the room. And at some point, I saw that the writing was on the wall. I decided to leave to go see some friends that aren't in politics. And then I hit that 3 a.m. train leaving D.C. on the way back to Baltimore, where I live. And as I'm scrolling through my timeline, it's almost like a commercial for Suicide Watch. How people are feeling, what they're saying, the level of fear, the level of confusion. And honestly, it was difficult for me to relate to some of what I was seeing. So as much as I put into seeing Hillary win, I don't think I was ever confused about what this was and what it wasn't. We had two people running for president, four people running for president, to be fair, four people running for president who had the capacity and the desire to deliver for our people on multiple levels. I supported Hillary, but I still understood where were the areas I'm going to have to battle Hillary to get stuff my community needs. And so when she lost, I was disappointed, because I fundamentally believe that her policy direction was going to be better than Trump's. But I never thought she was going to be perfect. And so it's almost like chess for me. I know the moves that I was going to need to make under a Clinton administration to continue to push for the things that I think are necessary for my community. With Trump in office, there's a different set of moves, but it still work. And so when somebody hit me and said, man, what are we going to do tomorrow? I said, well, I'm going to wake my kids up and get them ready for school and prepare them to be able to have conversations that they are or are not ready to have. And then I'm going to go to work. And then I'm going to go to work the next day. And then I'm going to build with people the day after that. And then I'm going to strategize with the people after that. And then we're going to mobilize and engage with people the day after that. Because this work never stops. And the moment I think we get this emotionally involved with a presidential election, sometimes we have missed, how do I say this in a way that's fair? Sometimes I think we have skewed context of, number one, what this person has the power to do, and two, what we have the obligation to do. And so I'm angry about what I think some of our realities are going to be as a result of Trump. But I'm committed. I'm committed to doing the work that I'm sorry, I missed the name of the brother who just got off, but Color Change has been doing amazing work, and I think they're absolutely right. We don't have to wait till midterms. There are mayoral races in 2017 in over 25 major cities. And so from a political standpoint, we've got the ability to start gauging immediately. Who are these mayors? How do they feel about police reform? What do they think about school systems? And so, as some of them are controlling the schools or responsible for placing school board members, how are they dealing with job creation by supporting or creating resources through the state or the federal government on small business? What's the opportunity that they're creating in targeted communities in their cities? And how are we, as people who care about that, engaging those mayoral candidates so that none of them, regardless of party, have the ability to think that they can get elected in the cities that we live in without coming through us? And so I want to be real careful in saying I don't think that there is anything wrong with people who are emotionally responding to this. I think that there is some legitimate political, social, and economic fear that's connected to this. But our communities have survived worse than Trump. and we've survived worse than Trump and thrived in response to it. And so I think the question for us is not, is what Trump going to do? What is his administration going to look like? What are we going to do? Where are we going to serve? Where are we going to build? Where are we going to create? Where are we going to mobilize? How are we going to be relentlessly bold in how not only we hold elected officials accountable, but how we hold ourselves accountable for the work that we have to do? And so without belaboring that point anymore, that's at least where I am. And I'm encouraged that there are a number of brothers and sisters around the country who, even in their anger and their frustration, in some cases in their fear, feel the same way that I do and are willing to kind of step out of that in the name of asking ourselves, what are we supposed to do today? And how does that set us up to do what we're supposed to do tomorrow?
Wonderful. Yeah, I mean, I think that that is a wonderful high note to end things on. And, you know, before we let you go, because certainly, again, want to be respectful of your time and very appreciative that you even took the time to dial in on your anniversary today. So congratulations again on that. And just want to leave folks with a way to stay engaged with Manhood Legacy. Any folks on the call who've never joined a prayer call before but want to now, you know, how can they do that? How can they stay in touch with you all and up to date on what you have going on?
No, thank you, and thank you for the anniversary wish. I'm in planning mode in anticipation of my wife getting home from work, so it's still a good time, and I think it's a reflection of how important just how important the work that CBMA is doing, and just the support that they've given us. And so, for brothers that are interested, you can hit our website, and I think we are. I'm almost positive we are doing modifications to the site because we're doing a bunch of upgrades, but it's manhoodlegacy.com. And that will give you, whether we're doing the construction or not, it'll give you all the information on when the call is, and that's Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. We've got Manhood Legacy on Twitter, which will also give you updates of the prayers themselves. And we never keep people on the line more than about 15 minutes every morning. And if you're interested, you also have the ability of requesting recordings if there was a prayer that specifically spoke to you and you want to meditate on it. But it's welcome to all. And when we say brothers, we just mean brothers. I think we're overwhelmingly African American, but I know that there are brothers that call from all over the world, all races, ethnicities, socioeconomic backgrounds. And so it is a true community, and it's growing. And so as we move into 2017, we're going to be taking some of our conversations off the call, having some strategy and accountability partnership development for brothers that are part of the community. And I'm really excited about where we're going and just blessed to work with some of the brothers that are part of our core leadership. To make it real on a daily basis. So really, thank you for letting me share today. Thank you all for pulling this kind of conversation together and just the ongoing work that you all do just to move kind of beyond discourse. You all are just so continue to be engaged in supporting brothers that are about impact. And I just want to be part of the choir that says thank you so much to CBMA for what you all do.
Thank you, Jeff. We really appreciate you. And have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thank you again. And I think that's a high note to go into a hopeful note. We've been focusing a lot on the election, which is important, but I also think, you know, it's good to focus on the beacons of light and the work that still continues. And so next we're going to talk about an amazing event that CBMA was able to partner with the My Brother's Keeper Alliance in Detroit on called Pathways to Success. And joining us to talk about the event is Robert Simmons, who's the Vice President of Strategy and Innovation here at CBMA. We also have Chanel Hampton, who's the founder and president of Hampton Consulting, which is one of the premier consulting firms in the Midwest. And together, Robert and Chanel were doing tremendous work on the ground in Detroit to pull this event together, which took place at the Cobo Center. And it was more than 40 companies that came together for this job fair. Tanya Allen, the CEO of the Skillman Foundation, I saw that she said it's not a job fair, it's an opportunity fair. And so I thought that that was just a very powerful way to frame the event. And so I want to turn it over now to Robert and Chanel. Are you guys on the line?
Yes, yes, I'm here. Can you hear me, Janet?
I can hear you. Can hear you fine. Thank you both for joining. I know the event was just on Monday, so it's you all are fresh coming off of it. So can you talk about, you know, what activities were happening at the event, what sort of opportunities were being offered, you know, for folks who either weren't able to join or only just now hearing about it?
Sure. Thanks for everyone joining the call. I'll talk briefly, just a general overview, and then turn it over to Chanel to share some of the data and what happened. So we partnered with My Brother's Keeper Alliance and the City of Detroit to launch an Opportunity Youth Summit, where we brought together community leaders in the city. We brought together folks for a variety of workshops to support young people and provide them with deep insights, and not just insights, but support the next steps as they navigate a world that for many of them has forgotten them. But we wanted to remind them that they are not forgotten by members of this nation, members of the CBMA network, and citizens of Detroit. And through this enterprise, we were able to offer young people job training, but also, more importantly, jobs on the spot. And they had some on the spot hirings that took place during the day. The event took place at Cobo Hall in Detroit. So, you know, it was a great time had by all. People are already asking us what's next. People are asking us, well, are you all going to do this every month? And the answer is no, we can't do it every month, but we can certainly begin the planning process of next steps. So I'll turn it over to Chanel to offer up some of the statistics and then talk a little bit about some of the workshops and just her own reflections as the person we partnered with to do this work.
Thanks, Robert. Everyone, it is a pleasure and an honor and just joyful to be on the call. I know that I cannot see you all, but thank you all for having me, and thank you all for joining us. Again, my name is Chanel Hampton, and in terms of the Boys and Young Men of Color Summit, it was honestly an honor to organize this summit behind the scenes, both as a Black woman and as a Detroiter. And it was furthermore an honor to witness the summit and the energy and the joy that just radiated through Monday. I've been saying every day since Monday that this narrative that we as a community do not want opportunities and that we do not invest in our community, Monday proved that narrative wrong yet again. And so to see the outpouring of young men from around my hometown and Robert's hometown, high schoolers, adult men, it was powerful. Just that joy and energy. And we had countless partners that were a part of this village pouring into our young men. So as Sean was saying, Sean said earlier, we are the cavalry. There's not another coming. And so Monday was a testament to that. Just, you know, we are who we need. So we had over 1,600 young men attend the summit, as well as nearly 300 volunteers and countless partners. At the end of the day, we had nearly 400 young men of color walking away on Monday with a job. And so I'm going to say that once more because I think this is more powerful than just being a statistic. Like, these are real men's lives. Over 1,600 young men attended the summit as participants. We had nearly 300 volunteers, countless partners and employers and community organizations, and nearly 400 young men of color walked away on Monday with a job or even multiple offers and follow-up interviews. A total of over 2,600 people were part of this village on Monday in some way, shape, or form. From barber to Macy's, we have a tie bar, to resume stations, some professional headshots for brand building, to mock interviews, mentorship tables, and panels full of community leaders. It was a powerful, powerful day. And it was just, it was humbling to be a part of. So all of the work behind the scenes, though, you know, it long weeks, long days, long nights, long hours, it was all worth it, and it was powerful to see. A couple of personal reflections for me, Robert alluded to. One of our panels was full of childhood friends who all play professionally. So one of the panels was the other side of sports. We also had leadership through mentorship, dress for success, and responsible social media and technology. But honestly, my favorite panel was this other side of sports, and it's because there was a retired NBA player, Derek Coleman, who I kind of consider to be an uncle to me now. He actually coaches with my uncle here in the city. And a bunch of our panelists ended up, we kind of strategically, they were childhood friends. And so to see that and to see the reminiscing and just like the conversation, it was like you were at a family reunion. And so it was powerful to see and to see people standing in the back because they, like, literally, like, people just watching, listening, sitting in chairs, filling up, and just listening to almost like barbershop talk. It was powerful. My husband was running mock interviews and checking in on me to make sure I was okay. One of my that I taught for 3 years, who's now a sophomore up here at Michigan, was one of our volunteers at the resume station. I saw tens of kids that I've been working with here in the city for years and saw parents, like literally a parent of one of my guy kids was there interviewing. It was a village. And so to see that, to be able to share in that experience with young men and women, like my students that I taught, it was amazing. I can truly say it was an intangible feeling. And this was us. This is what we do as a community. This is what we're going to continue to do. It's what we know we must do. So, again, it was an honor to organize and work with the summit behind the scenes, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And, again, I think I'm constantly thinking about how we can correct the narrative, and I think Monday was an epitome and a model of what our community really is and what we know we can be and should be. So I will leave it at that because I could go on, honestly, for hours just about the many examples I saw of our young men coming together across neighborhoods and the mentorship that was happening and just this full generational cycle coming together, but it was truly powerful. And I must also say I had a wonderful, wonderful time working with the CBMA team, working with Robert, who has been a friend and colleague for years. I will leave it at that. And Robert, if there's anything I missed, feel free to chime in.
No, I'm good. You summed up everything and captured the essence and the spirit of the day.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, Chanel and Robert, for that the comprehensive overview, and, you know, Chanel, you touched on it, and Robert, I know you're also a native of Detroit, so this event, you know, happening in your hometown, I'm sure that it took on an even greater importance because that's your city and you want to see it succeed. How do you think events like these help to not only expand economic opportunity, but also, you know, just Black male achievement in Detroit, in the Michigan area, and just in general? Because like you said, Chanel, there's the real-life impact that it has on people's lives in, you know, giving them meaningful employment or connecting them to opportunity. But there's also the narrative change aspect. And, you know, there was some really great coverage, some local coverage. And so that just having media paying attention to these types of events does a tremendous amount in terms of helping to change and shift perceptions of Black men and boys. But, you know, being natives of Detroit, how do you feel like in the long-term standpoint this can help your city and the people in your city?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it was powerful to see young men show up looking for opportunity. There was one young brother who sat through all three of the workshops, had questions, was engaged, and just by result of being engaged, and I think he was 16 years old, he got offered a internship because people kept hearing him ask questions, and there was one of the employers sitting directly behind us, Shinola, and they offered him an internship on the spot. He didn't come for an internship. He came for opportunity and information. So for me, I think part of it is a narrative change around a lot of folks portraying so many Black men in Detroit as lazy and uncommitted to their own success. But I think that we saw that when given the right opportunities and exposed to the supports that they need, that so many young men will show up, I mean, and show out when they get there in terms of their intellectual engagement and thought partnership. In fact, when I was coming into the event, Janet, there was a line from the front door of the place almost to the exit of the convention center for people to sign up. The most compelling story, and I'll end on this, is that I was talking to a colleague from My Brother's Keeper Alliance at the end of the day, and this brother was sitting across from us on a computer, and he overheard our conversation, and he overheard I was from Detroit. He was like, oh, we're part of Detroit, and we're having this conversation. And I said, oh, well, what brought you down here? This brother said, I was sitting at home eating breakfast and eating my cereal, and I heard about the summit on television. I came down here because I want a job, because I want to take care of my family. And literally, he's sitting there on the computer, and I said, well, how long have you been doing this at the computer? He said, I've been on this thing filling out every an application for every company here. I've been at this computer for 2.5 hours. So for me, I just think that's a testament to the resilient spirit of Detroiters across the board. And the city of Detroit stepped up, and the community provided all the supports needed to make it happen.
Wonderful, wonderful. Chanel, do you have any closing thoughts or reflections?
I think Robert alluded to this, and I echo everything that Robert shared. For me, and I think for all of us, we know that I think about this as a moment within this greater movement. And so Monday was powerful, to say the least. We also know that there's more short-term and long-term work that needs to be done. And so I'm very eager, and I know we're all kind of chomping at the bit, very eager to do that work. And so while, you know, Monday was great, I think what's even more powerful is this commitment that CBMA is making, right, and that our partners are making to say we're going to do this work and serve our community and be part of this community for the long term. And so this summit, you know, it's a high. You're riding on a high when you see that joy and feel the energy in that room and to think about, you know, this is just the beginning in so many ways. And so I'm very eager. I'm very hopeful. And I'm honored and humbled to do this work. So I'm looking forward to what we are doing in the future and will be doing in the future.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. You know, you both have been paying attention, and though I regret not have been able to be there in person, I was, you know, watching the response on social media and just commend the two of you for the amazing work that you all are doing there, and certainly appreciate you taking the time to give our members an update on that incredible work. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
And so I know we're going a little bit over, so before we wrap things up, we just have a few quick updates on the CBMA side that we want to share, some activities and initiatives that are happening over the next week or so that we definitely want you all to be motivated to participate in any way possible. So I'm going to get started, and then to talk specifically about our Rumble Young Man Rumble, I'm actually going to turn it over to Steve Vassar, who's joining us today. He's the manager of our Rumble, so he can provide a quick update. But the first thing that's happening is, obviously, November 25th is Black Friday, and ordinarily this is a day where people across the country are going out in droves to shop for Christmas. But what we are partnering with Blackout for Human Rights to do, and for those who don't know what Blackout for Human Rights is, it's a collective of activists and entertainers that have come together to help provide a platform for communities that are struggling with human rights issues to be heard. And so since 2013, Blackout has been hosting an annual event called Blackout Black Friday, where they encourage people across the country to, instead of rushing out to the store and putting their money into these corporations, to instead focus that money on supporting small community-based businesses, and in particular, black business as well. And so in addition to just that broad call to action to, you know, spend your money in a more meaningful way that contributes to local economic growth and sustainability, we also host a number of events across the country that celebrate arts and movement building. And so there will be some cultural events that are happening in key cities, including New York, Oakland, Los Angeles, and also Flint, Michigan. And we will be sharing some details around what those events will be over the next couple of days. So we encourage you to be on the lookout for that. And even if you're not able to come out for one of the events, hopefully you will try to commit to supporting Black-owned businesses in your community. And, of course, the following Saturday is Small Business Saturday, so that's yet another opportunity to support entrepreneurs and small business owners. The other exciting development is the Across the Fence campaign. So some of you may have joined the call that took place last Thursday that CBMA co-hosted with Values Partnerships, and also Denzel Washington was joining us to talk about the new film Fences that he has coming out. He stars in it. He is the director of it. It also stars Viola Davis. I'm sure many of us have seen the trailer. It's going to be very powerful. And so in conjunction with the film, a new campaign is going to officially launch on Wednesday, November 30th, called Across the Fence. And the focus of the campaign is really to encourage people across the country to use social media to connect with family members in new ways, to share loving messages, build stronger bonds. And, you know, CBMA, for our part, we really see this as being a crucial aspect of our narrative change work and lifting up Black family and community, the relationship between Black fathers and sons and daughters. And so some ways that you can participate in this campaign is you can share a photo of a loved one on social media with a healing message and using the hashtag Across the Fence. You have some folks that are doing brief videos that they're sharing on Snapchat or on Facebook, also with the hashtag. You have others who are doing original songs or producing works of art for loved ones and sharing that on social media. And then we are also encouraging folks to actually conduct interviews. There is a huge opportunity on Thanksgiving where many of us will be with family to ask questions. You know, some of us have information about our families that we don't know, things that are not readily available, and so we're encouraging this campaign to be an opportunity to create that dialogue. And so you can actually sign up to participate and see examples of content on the official website, which is www.acrossthefence.co. So, again, that's www.acrossthefence.co. And what's even more exciting is that selected participants will receive some prizes, including the opportunity to take a trip and meet Denzel Washington and Viola Davis. So, you know, that it would be a tremendous opportunity, but also just in general, this campaign is, I think, going to be a tremendous opportunity to really help change the narrative and create meaningful family bonds. So we definitely encourage you to look out for that. And from there, I'm going to turn it over to Steve Vassar to just give a really quick update about our 6th annual Rumble, Young Man Rumble, which is also kicking off on November 30th in Louisville, Kentucky. Steve, you there?
Yes. So thank you, Janet. All right. I appreciate you. And good afternoon to everyone. I will tell you, in the spirit of Ali, that we are all, this work that we're in right now is a moment where, as Sean would say, we might either be doing a rope-a-dope or we might literally be going in for the first-round knockout. It's your choice, though, but what we must do as rumblers, as people in this work, is we must get ready. And so with that, we'd like to tell you that on November 30th through December 2nd, 150 rumblers will descend upon and join us in Louisville, Kentucky for the 6th annual Rumble Young Man Rumble event. I am going to cut all of my commentary short for the sake of time and say that if you are not joining us in person, we ask that you pay attention to CBMA's website, that is blackmaleachievement.org. The RYMR page, the Rumble Young Man Rumble page. So blackmaleachievement.org/RYMR to find updates. We will also live stream a portion of the event on Periscope and certainly live stream the awards ceremony where we will be hearing comedy from Brother Alvin Irby of Barbershop Books, where three teams of flyweight rumblers, that's young men, are going to compete in a poetry slam, and where we will award six people based on Muhammad Ali's core principles. Thanks to the 400 of you who voted for those six awardees, we will also recognize entertainer and activist and humanitarian Harry Belafonte with a Lifetime Achievement Award. We look forward to seeing you if you're going to join us in person. If you're joining us virtually, we look forward to having you join us, and we just thank you for your rumbling energy as we keep moving forward for Black men and boys in America. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. And like Steve said, you can visit www.blackmaleachievement.org/RYMR, and we will certainly be sending out the live stream link. So for those who are not attending in person but certainly want to watch online and find out who the winners are of the awards, we definitely want to make sure you have that link. So we'll be sending that around to you again a couple of times next week. So with that, I want to thank everybody for joining today. This was a very special and I think important now more than ever call, and so I appreciate you all and also want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving and a wonderful weekend, and look forward to convening again next month.